now at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thank you for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly, but right now you can give a call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Questions, concerns, ideas, or comments, and Alex is here. He will answer the phone. He just needs your first name. I keep saying first name and where you're calling from. Alex told me, don't tell him where they're calling. He doesn't care. No, anyway, just your first name. It doesn't matter. And Mr. Kelly.
Yo.
So we're in October. So
yeah.
It's pumpkin month and it's Halloween month.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have a barn, correct?
Yeah.
And so do you have any bats in your barn?
I don't think so.
Really?
Well, I've had them before, not necessarily inside, but I know when I used to go out, there would be some flying around. I haven't seen any in a while, though. Did you hear about the guy in Illinois woke up with a bat on his neck?
What?
Yeah, a man in his 80s in Lake County, Illinois, which is north up to Wisconsin, north of Chicago, and he actually died of rabies. He refused the treatments, and he wound up dying of rabies, but he woke up with a bat on his neck.
Where in the world was he that have a bat on his neck?
In his house.
What?
Yeah. Talk about scary.
Yeah, so...
Oh, my goodness.
Dracula's real, huh?
Apparently. Yes.
Gee,
but no, we used to see, I used to kind of see bats at night flying around there, but I haven't in a while.
Yeah.
So
growing up in Ellisville, we used to see bats a lot.
Really?
But I haven't seen any bats for a long time. And I was hoping you had a picture of a bat on your phone.
No, no. No. What I do have, and I meant to show you this, I accidentally hit the slow motion button on my phone, and I was shooting a monarch butterfly. And a hummingbird.
Together.
Right next to each other.
Wow.
And then another hummingbird comes flying across the screen, and it's all in slow motion. It's really cool. I'll show it to you
later.
Wow,
that does sound cool.
We still have a couple hummingbirds.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for them all to leave. We still got two or three.
This past week, I saw either two or I saw one that came back around to check out the lantana plant. So it's kind of hard to tell. Let's see, is that the same one or...
Right.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, it's really kind of amazing that they're this late.
I can't believe they're still here.
Right.
Yeah. Crazy.
Global change.
Yes.
Warming, I guess.
There you go.
All right. This is Saturday morning. We get together and we'll have a discussion about what's impacting your landscape. And should you be doing anything? Well, I'll tell you what. I got the grow lights in my basement plugged up, the timers on them and everything, so... I'm going to start bringing my houseplants in the next week or so. And what is a potting mix? And should I improve my soil or does it really matter? Or I got this low spot in my yard. Can I just dump something in there or do I need to mix it in with the existing soil? Should I be doing some pruning? What are all those spider webs on everything? It's unbelievable. And what you do is use the information I share with you and hopefully it'll help you solidify your options. And, of course, the final judgment on the action you're going to take is going to be on your shoulders. This is your show, and I certainly appreciate you inviting me into your home, car, or wherever you happen to be listening. Another very important player, as I said before, is Alex. He's producing. Alex has got a kind of a cold, so if whenever he answers a phone, if he sounds a little bit different, that's because he's got kind of a cold. Anyway, I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. I can come to your home and do a landscape consultation if you'd like for me to come around and do a walk and talk. This past week, I was in Webster Groves, great house, great landscape, and a nice lady living there. And then today, after this show, I'm headed to Town and Country. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. The homepage, there's my email address and phone number where I can be reached. Well, let's get moving. Today's stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. As I approached where I was heading, crows were filling part of the sky. Sky was just, you know, it was really like blue-gray, and they were filling the sky with, you know, flight and also with song. A tall building fills a corner at the block, or fills a whole block at the corner of Tucker and Market. All sorts of utility colors on the sidewalks, arrows pointing this way and this and that and everything else. So it's really kind of amazing. Each utility has a separate color. So when they come out and they need to mark wherever their underground stuff is, you can tell this is this, this is this, 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 this. And it's really kind of incredible. Well, the crabapple street trees, well, they've seen better days. And as you look around, the concrete sidewalks give way to granite pavers. And this is the entrance to the Civil Courts building. And it's really kind of a cool, you know, cool building just kind of in general. Planting and all the cutouts of the kind of entranceway includes several types of ornamental grasses. Many of them are in flower right now. There's boxwood in there. Must be dwarf boxwood because I rarely see them overgrowing the space at all. And I don't see any recent prunings on them. And they really are a nice add, or nice texture contrast to the ornamental grasses. The sheriff, excuse me, the sheriff, St. Louis Vance, stand at attention on the corner of, on Market. A sign on one of the benches say, no skateboarding or bicycle riding. Flowering pear trees filled with little marble-sized fruits that were formed from that early spring white flowers that they have. And some of the trees were starting to turn red. And that's one of the nice things about the flowering pear trees is the spring flowers and fall color, but the smell when they're in flower, not so good. Anyway, there was a breeze, at least it felt like it, but the United States and Missouri flags were really kind of hanging down. They weren't moving too much. There's a wrought iron fence area, which has a boxwood inside enclosure. And there's a statue there with a granite listing. And what this is, the statue is a statue of a policeman holding his hat in his hand. And it's in memory of the St. Louis police officers who have given their lives in performance of their duty. And it's just the earliest date that they have. There's like a granite area where they etch him in. It's 1863, and the most recent date is 2020. So it was like that, you know, that whole courtyard or entranceway and everything to the Civil Courts building is really kind of unique and interesting. Well, the sky was really starting to wake up and brighten up, and that meant, well, it was time to go. So Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline. If you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, I do have an appointment to walk and talk out in town and country today, so I hope it doesn't start raining until after that's over. But boy, the ground is pretty dry. I spent last Wednesday, I had a walk and talk in Webster, and when I got home, pretty much watering everything. The lawn, I cut the grass and then I water the lawn because the ground is really pretty dry. It's kind of amazing. And especially if you've got spots in between sidewalks and streets or the strip, you know, the strips along a sidewalk leading up to your front door, that's going to be exceptionally dry and probably even the watering is not going to make it so you're going to have really successful grass in those circumstances. So it's just... And it doesn't hurt, to be honest with you, to if there is going to be rain and it's coming and you're fairly sure it is, whether it is or not, it doesn't really matter. But if you water first, you soften the ground and that enables the rain to not just run off because if it's your ground is really hard, a lot of the rain can just run off and it doesn't soak in down in, into the ground to the advantage of your root system. So that's something to be concerned with. So 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We have phone lines open if you have any questions or concerns. Let's head over to Mary's yard. Hi, Mary.
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
Mike, I've got two questions today. The first one is about poinsettias. I had gotten four or five at Christmas time, and I left them in their pots and planted them outside. And they're gorgeous, but they're totally green. I'd like to try and do the right thing so that they'll brighten red for the Christmas time. Can you tell me how to do that?
Basically, you're going to bring them inside, of course, and just make sure that they go through a sequence of, you know, about 12 hours of light and then 12 hours of dark. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to duplicate what the environment is where they're from. And I think they're from southern Mexico. So this time of year, that's why those bracts turn colors. and they turn colors so they can get pollinated by the insects and everything that is down there. So that's what you need to do is kind of set them off, you know, and it's a lot of work. I won't fool you. But what you can do is if you got a place in your basement, you can do some grow lights. You can just get a timer, get some grow lights, and just run them for 12 hours and then have them shut off for 12 hours. So you don't have to put them in closets or do all that other stuff.
Now, do I need to water them during this?
Yeah, definitely want to make sure that they, I mean, they're still alive and viable and everything else. So it's not like an amaryllis bulb that you let go totally dry during this, let's say, dormancy or hibernation or whatever it happens to be, whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, you've got, I mean, they're still viable and alive. And you got to keep them healthy.
And about, Mike, how many weeks do I need to do that? So I'm trying to time it so that I start this 12 hours dark, 12 hours light. So around Christmas time is when they turn red.
Well, they're going to be turning red prior to that, and they just don't all of a sudden overnight turn red. So it's going to be a slow process. So it just depends upon the individual plant, individual circumstance. But plan on probably 6 or 8 weeks of doing that.
Okay, so what, you think I could start them like in a week or two and get it all set up?
Right, exactly.
Okay, and my second question is, I'm very blessed that we've had a really good year of the yard, and it's looked excellent everywhere but the very front yard where my great big dog has pulled up some of the grass in just right where you walk in the door, right? So is there, and so we've got their spots, and he hasn't dug down where he's gotten the dirt up. He's just torn off all the grass. What can we do to make it look just decent until the spring? Because they're coming to air or core aerated
right
now. That's supposed to be done next week. I mean, can I still buy sod anywhere?
Sod should be available if you've got a cool season lawn, like a fescue or bluegrass.
Right.
So
yes,
that should,
we have.
You know, that should be it. And what it is, you know, I have that same kind of problem, only I don't have a dog that does it, but the neighbor's dogs, when they walk them, the strip between the sidewalk and street, what
right
they do is they mark that territory. And so with their back leg, they scratch and scratch and scratch. So I end up with a lot of sedum out on my, you know, sometimes in the street and the sidewalk
right
and everything else. So that's what the dog's doing. For whatever reason, there's some kind of scent there that is causing him to want to mark that territory, saying, this is my territory, you stay out of here.
Well, now, so what do I do, Mike? I mean, it looks like there's dead grass all over where the spots are.
Right.
So do I pull that up first?
Well, you can just turn that over or work that in the, you know, into the ground, and then probably add a little bit of compost, an inch or so, as you're turning this over, and then
okay
lay this new sod down on top of that. But to be honest with you, the smell is probably still going to be there, and he may mark that, you know, the new sodded area as well.
Yeah. Well, Mike, thank you so much. Your show is just the highlight of my weekend.
Well, thank you. I greatly appreciate that.
Okay.
314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. This is a time of year where your, let's say, summertime bulbs, your cannas, your caladiums, your elephant ears, all those type things, the gladiolas, the dahlias. It's sometimes, you know, people say wait until the frost nips them before you sort of like dig them up. But you don't have to do that. What I've already started to do, because I have several different pots with cannas and elephant ears, so I don't have to do it all at once. I just do one or two pots a week, and I just take them in the garage. I tip them on their side. I pull everything out. I shake all the soil off the bulb, and then I put that soil just in tubs that I store over for the wintertime. And then I just leave the bulbs. I let the foliage stay on them for a while because it doesn't really matter. And then I just let the bulbs dry out after I've shaken all the soil off of them. And today I'll probably do one or two more pots. And it's just, you know, it's a really kind of a long, involved process, but it's something that you need to do generally. But then when I say that, there's a couple houses in my neighborhood who leave their cannas. They're planted right along the side of the house, and it's on the south side of their house. And they just leave their cannas in the ground all year long. So I don't know if the elephant ears could survive that. And as you know, as another house that's very close to me that I always call the banana canna farm, they pull their stuff up every year, and they've been doing it for a long time. And they've added elephant ears to their bananas and cannas, so they've got quite a scenario there. It's really at Morgan Ford and Federer if you're interested in seeing the banana canna farm. And make sure that you start any kind of dead branches or anything on your trees or shrubs. If you can have access to them, get rid of them, because it's, it offers a potential problem or an invitation for potential problems. So just, kind of keep that in mind. And also, a lady called last week and she was worried about spider webs all over everything. My mugo pine and a couple other plants, some of my boxwood, have a lot of spider, spider webbings. But it really is not problematic. And if it really bothers you aesthetically, you can use a stick or something. Or sometimes people say, well, just use a shot of water. But a lot of times it's difficult to kind of wash them all away with water. And this is a time of year where if you have newly installed trees, put some, let's say, fencing or something around it to keep the rabbits and everything from gnawing on the bark in the lower part of the trunk, because they can really do some problems. And as I said before, the soil is dry, so keep watering not just necessarily newly installed trees and shrubs, but the existing ones as well, to keep them healthy going into wintertime, because dry soil going into wintertime is the worst possible thing for the plant material. And so that's probably when you just go ahead and take a break. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
Is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, realize that if you do have conifers, so in other words, plants with needles, that this is a time of year where you're going to have some of the interior needles. So in other words, not the ones at the end of the branches, but closer down towards the center, you're going to be turning brown and dropping. But that's exactly what it should be doing this time of year. Let's head over to Mary's house. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I cannot say enough good things about Timberwood Nursery and Tree Service. They came out and had to redo what another arborist did. They're reasonable, they're knowledgeable, they gave me more information about things to keep my plants, my trees healthy. So I just wanted to give a thumbs up to Timberwood and thanks.
Yeah, Timberline.
Timberline, yes.
Right.
They take their time, there was no rush. You will not be disappointed in them. Thank you so much, Mike.
Well, great. Thanks, Mary.
Too. Okay, bye-bye.
Yep, and now let's go to another Mary's yard. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mike. I have a sweet gum tree in my yard. It's near my house. It's old. It's very, very tall. And I just came into some money, so now I can get it trimmed. And I want to know, I'd like to trim it back as severely as possible without killing it. So, I just want to know, I hear you're not supposed to top trees, but if I tell them to top the tree and trim all the branches back, is that going to kill it? If it does, how long will it take, or will it eventually grow back? I just want to bring it down without actually destroying it.
Well, anyway, cutting back severely, like what you're talking about, what it does is eliminate leaves, because the branches you've cut off no longer has any leaves. Now, the tree's health and longevity and everything else is related to the foliage, whether it's needles or whether it's regular leaves or not. And when you eliminate that, what that does is nutrients and moisture come up from the ground. They go to the leaves, when it's, leaves leafing out, and even on evergreens and everything else during the growing season, that uses sun with those nutrients and moisture to make chlorophyll, and that's the food to keep the tree healthy. So when you eliminate that, then you basically are sort of like truncating its life.
Well, okay, so is there any way to trim a tree back without hurting it?
Yeah, I mean, you can, tree service, and if they're arborists and they know what they're doing, can selectively take some of the branches out. But so that's about all you can do. I mean, you can cut them back to a certain point, but you can't stub them back because that's where the trouble comes from.
Well, if I were to trim this as much as I could, is it better to do that at the end of the growing season, like around this time of year, or is it better to do it in the spring when it's trying to bust out anyway?
Basically, the time to do it is when the foliage starts changing colors and falling off, all the way up until the new growth begins in the late winter, early spring, depending upon our weather. So you've got about 4 or 5 months to do it. For a sweet gum tree, that's the time you want to do it. For like, if it was a maple or a birch or a beech, you want to do it in the summertime. But sweet gums, you want to do it during the winter dormancy.
So I should, if I am going to do it, I should definitely wait till like November, December?
You don't have to wait. I mean, it's really, they're headed towards dormancy now. I'm not saying you should rush out and have it done right now, but yeah, you've got a considerable amount of time to get it done and with, you know, not to the adverse advantage of the tree just in general.
If I have them top it, is that going to mean instant death, or does that mean it'll just peter out over the next growing season?
It's not going to mean instant death, but it's going to mean there's no branches there to push out any leaves, so you're going to see some kind of strange branches coming off trunks and coming off some other major branches, and those are just going to, I mean, they may survive, but the tree's headed downhill. Most tree services, if they're reputable, are not going to top your tree like what you want. They're just not going to do it.
Okay. Okay, well, I guess maybe I should just take the whole thing down and grow a new one. I'm just not sure what to do. It's way too tall. The branches are like over my roof, and I don't want it there, you know?
Right. So, I mean, having a tree removed, maybe that's to the advantage of just the overall scenario. But just realize that spot where the tree was, and, you know, going out X amount of feet from where the trunk actually went into the ground, you're going to have real difficulty growing anything in that space. So you're not going to be able to plant a tree right back in that location.
Wow. So this is distressing because I want to just trim it back. If I take it down, then I can't replace it. So this is a rock and a hard place, it feels like.
Yeah, it sounds like you should move.
I don't think that's happening.
Oh.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Sure. Yeah, it's you don't see trees being, you know, deadheaded or topped severely any place anymore at all. So, I mean, the arborists just don't do it because it's to the disadvantage. It's something that you want, but you don't quite understand what, you know, branches and everything else actually mean for the overall health of the tree. Let's go over to Kathleen's yard now. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a beautiful magnolia tree. Stays green all year long because of where they planted it. We planted it about 7 years ago. But it is way, way, way too close to the house. It's only about 18 inches.
Whoa.
We need to move it. When is the best time to move that type of a tree? It stays green all year because it's in a sheltered spot right by our dryer vent. So we know it's got to be moved. And like I said, it wasn't a mature tree when they put it in. So let's say it's between seven and 10 years old. So I want to move it. We need to move it. We're probably going to just move it maybe 10 feet away to the middle of our front yard. But when is the best time to do it on that type of a tree?
Basically, the closeness to a dryer vent or house or whatever it is has nothing to do with this. This is a variety of magnolia that stays evergreen. So it doesn't have anything to do with location or anything else. But, you know, this is a tree where the root ball and everything else is going to be extremely heavy. And to move that tree is going to be extremely expensive. So
that's what I was afraid of. But we know we need to get professionals to do it.
Right.
But I want to make sure that we schedule it at when would be the best time to keep the tree as healthy as possible.
Yeah, I mean, with this, basically this is a southern magnolia. This is about as far north as they're able to grow. And so consequently, you know, digging it up, tearing up the root system and everything else, whether it's going to be able to survive that is going to be somewhat of an iffy circumstance. So just as long as you understand that and realize that, then I would say probably my tendency would be, because it is evergreen, I would probably wait until we're coming out of wintertime and maybe do it around Valentine's Day or Ides of March or something like that, as opposed to going into winter. Because going into winter for our an evergreen, if we have a severe winter, it could really do some major damage to it.
Okay. That answers that question. So when I start pricing and calling people to get estimates, I just need to mention that we want to do it in early spring.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Thank you. I enjoy your show whenever I get a chance to listen to it.
Well, great. Well, thanks for having me on your show. And now let's head over to Barb's yard. Hi, Barb.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Two questions, of course. You can't call in unless you ask two questions. if I cut my rutabaga, they're done. Can I cut them off, or do I need to leave them there for the seed?
I would probably just leave them. So in other words, the seeds may drop and may, but also they're going to be, you know, they're going to be seeds for birds and everything else. So you can cut them off if you want, but you don't need to unless you just, it's really up to you.
A volunteer that come back every year.
Right.
The other question, I know you've explained this endlessly, but I still haven't got it in my head. Pre-emergence, I have maybe 24 huge marigolds come up every year in the garden. And of course, there's lots of weeds got in there, too, that I'm not good at keeping all of that done. Can I put pre-emergence down, would that kill the marigold too?
Anything that's coming up from seed, whether it's lawn, whether it's anything, whether flowering-wise, pre-emergent kills. It creates a chemical barrier, and when the seed germinates, it just kills it right at that point.
Okay. I guess I'm still looking for answers. I can't possibly pull all these weeds out, but the marigolds for maybe 4 or 5 years come back repeatedly, huge amount.
That's kind of interesting, because marigolds generally don't self-seed and come back like that. So the fact that yours are, that's, you know, kind of great. Now,
they're like a foot across at least. There's just so many of them. They come back every year
great.
In my garden. And so, but they also, the weeds have got very bad in them.
Right.
Okay. No answers, but just simply crawl around pulling forever.
Right, exactly. Or you can take something like Roundup and just go in there and just paint it onto the weeds to kill the weeds off. And that way it won't get onto your marigolds.
There's probably a couple hundred weeds in there. Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. No easy answer. Thank you.
Nope. Nothing in the outdoors is easy. No getting around it. Let's head over to Paul's yard. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I have a canna lily. It's about 4.5-5 foot tall in about a 14-inch pot. Is it too late in the season to put it in the ground?
No, not at all. This is the ideal time to do it. So the ground is warm, then the plant gets to go like asleep for the wintertime. So that's actually, fall is the best time to do any kind of installation of any kind of woody plant. Now, what was the name of the plant that you had?
It was a canna lily.
Oh, canna lily. So that's going to be, it's going to be somewhat marginally hardy, and so just make sure that if it doesn't come back, it's just because of our weather and everything else.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep. But this is the ideal time to do it. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Trees are starting to drop their leaves. Now, don't let them pile up on your lawn, because it can cause real problems. So whether you run over the top of them with your mower and, you know, bag them or whatever you want to do, or if you rake them, just don't let them pile up onto your lawn, because it can really cause some fungus problems for your lawn, regardless of the type of lawn that you have, whether it's zoysia, fescue, or bluegrass. Now let's head over to Max's yard. Hi, Max.
Hey, Mike. This is Max. I got a comment to make about the lady that was going to plant a magnolia tree in her front yard.
Okay. The one that was trying to move it away from her house?
Right. I moved into a house that had like a 20-foot magnolia tree in the front yard. And I lived there about 15 years. And that tree was a pain. It was continually dropping leaves, cones, and I don't know, whatever I was dropping. I would clean my yard, and the wind would come, and it was full of stuff.
Right.
And underneath the tree, the grass wouldn't grow. I mean, I hope she thinks about putting it in a backyard, maybe. Because that tree, I mean, I wish more arborists or people would recommend people not put them in the front yards.
Right. Or just in general. I mean, those leaves are like plastic, and they don't break down at all or anything else. And they are. I mean, we're on the northern edge of that, and so they're much more prone to being dropping leaves, you know, on a regular basis.
Exactly. I mean, I thought about moving it, but it was so big, so I ended up having to take it down. It was such a time saver after I had it down. And you mentioned my other second favorite tree, a sweet gum tree. I mean, when I go walking in the subdivision, a couple of neighbors have these sweet gum trees.
Right.
I mean, I love their leaves, but they're so treacherous on sidewalks and streets. You got to be so careful. I guess maybe I'm getting old. But that's another tree for a backyard next to your mimosa tree. Anyway, hey, I'll get off my soapbox. Thanks, Mike.
All right, great. Thanks, Max. Yeah, I mean, certain trees in certain locations, I mean, it's still, they're going to be problematic. There's no getting around it. So there's certain trees that, to be honest with you, really shouldn't even be, you know, let's say installed. Let's head over to Ted's yard. Hi, Ted. How are you?
Hey, Mike, really enjoy your show. When is the best time as the hostas start breaking down? When's the best time to clean that up? Should I leave those through the winter to kind of protect the roots, or should I clean it up before the winter comes and mulch them?
Well, as soon as they start discoloring and basically looking kind of along the perimeter and stuff, you can cut them down at that point. And you can put a couple inches of mulch over the top of them at that time. Leaving the leaves for the wintertime really is not to the advantage of the hosta whatsoever.
Okay, that's good to know. Okay, and what about the same as hardy hibiscus or what are the other ones with the big balls, hydrangeas? Same thing?
Well, you're talking about perennials versus a shrub. A hydrangea is a shrub. So
okay.
With the hydrangea, depends upon when it's, you know, blooms. If it's a summer bloomer versus a spring bloomer, then you can do the pruning. But what you can do this time of year, as the flowers have sort of finished or when they finish, just cut the flowers off, and then you don't have to do any pruning going into wintertime at all, and you can do some pruning if you want to as we come out of winter in the early spring before the new growth foliage starts emerging.
Okay, wonderful. I appreciate the advice. Again, really enjoy your show. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and I greatly appreciate you having me on your show.
Okay.
Let's head over to Jennifer's yard. Jennifer, how are you?
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi, I was calling. We just discovered we have a little group of fruit trees along the side of the edge of the yard, and one of the fruit trees we put in this year was a brown turkey fig tree, and it's the most amazing tree. It produced, like, I don't know, 40 or 50 little figs this year.
Really?
And it actually got, it's just tremendous. And it fell over during that big wind we had like 5 weeks ago, and it snapped at the base, which you would think would kill a tree, but it didn't. We propped it up, and now we have it tied up, and it's as green as it ever was, and it seems to be healing, and, you know, put all kinds of medicine on it, whatever. And so my question then is, because we've gone to so much trouble with this tree, and it is a prolific, provider of tasty fruit, is there a best way to overwinter it? should we maybe never have put it in the ground and left it in a pot, or should we, is it okay to actually just put, like, I don't know, like chicken wire around it and stuff it full of, I don't know, hay or something? I don't know. What's good for this tree over winter?
You know, just go online and look at, you know, let's say stabilizing or tying a tree. And that's the best way. So in other words, you're going to do some stakes and you're going to run some, you know, say lines parallel to the ground, and you want to have let's say a piece of hose so the trunk doesn't get rubbed. But if it got snapped off, for it to recover and actually come back is going to be a very very iffy circumstance.
I know, but it actually has. Like, that happened like 5 weeks ago. This tree is producing all kinds of fruit. The leaves are green and everything.
Right.
So I'm curious to see how it does over winter. Like you said, like, will the winter take it down?
Right.
But so far, I mean, knock wood, you know, it's been great. I think we're going to plant another one in the spring, depending upon how hard it is to overwinter, because they're amazing.
Yeah, in the Hill neighborhood, there's all kinds of figs, you know, being grown in people's yards. So
really? Nice. Yeah.
So it's really kind of a neat tree.
I know, like, we got one peach off of this tree, and we bought it with the peach on it, so that didn't count. And then we got no apples and no plums and no nectarines, but the fig is like, I got it, Mom. I'll do it all.
Great. Well, thanks, Jennifer. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. See you after the news.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome to the Garden Hotline, tip of the trowel hour. And I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but right now you can give a call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. And Mr. Kelly, is your yard headed towards dormancy?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, there are a couple of plants that have dried up and gone away, basically.
Right.
But we did just get some pansies and put those out, so those are looking very good.
Really?
Sue got those, and we spent last weekend planting those a little bit, and they look good.
Perfect.
So it's kind of a mix right now. We got some mums and put those out in the area that used to be sunflowers and wildflowers. Well, so we're kind of transitioning.
All right.
Yeah.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it is. It still looks very nice. And like I said, we still have a hummingbird, some butterflies, and now some of the other birds are starting to come back, the cardinals and those that kind of, they weren't around much in the summer, I guess, with the hummingbirds.
Right.
But now they're starting to come back. And it's amazing how quiet it is now without the hummingbirds. Because, I mean, you know, they're always making noise.
Yeah.
There's always a couple of them
cheeping,
that are, you know.
Cheeping.
Yeah. And now it's, like, really quiet there. So, it's a nice transition time of year.
Well, great. Well, perfect. Sounds good.
You bet.
And, folks, thanks for having me on your show. We can discuss plant selection, caring for it, ups and downs for annuals. As Mr. Kelly said, they just got some pansies. We had some pansies we got a couple weeks ago. The heat really got really knocked a couple of them out. So unfortunately, that's the way it goes. And that's, you know, plant material, you're never going to have necessarily 100% success. So you just kind of live with the good stuff. And if something doesn't make it, well, that's kind of okay. That's the way it goes. How about your bulbs? You got daffodils and tulips? No, don't plant them yet. It's too early. Your edibles, your ground covers, your house plants, your lawn, your perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, or water gardens. And perennials, if you're planning on transplanting or dividing any of the perennials, any of the ones that are not flowering, this is a fine time of year to be doing it. So, but any of the fall bloomers, that type of stuff, do not do that this time of year. But any of them, like the peonies or whatever, the iris, those type plants, this is a time to divide and transplant to new locations or whatever it happens to be. And please remember, my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take to have success. And it's strictly going to be offered to you to maybe consider. And across the big board is Alex. He's producing. He pushes the buttons, answers the phone. When you call, he just needs to have your name, and then he'll get you on the list. I spend the weeks doing landscape consulting, and today, after the show, I'm headed out to Town and Country. And actually, as a house I was at like 20 years ago when the people first moved into the house. So lately, I've had a couple of those that I was at their house quite a while ago, and they're having me come back and just kind of review or whatever it happens to be. So whether it's an aesthetic thing, problem solving, or just advice on the plant material, you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, on the homepage. That's where my email address and phone number, and you can contact me, and we'll set up a time where I can come to your home and do a walk and talk. Tip of the trial is a special recognition for individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me, and is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Tip of the trial, well, about a little bit over a month from now, on Saturday, November 6th, from 5:30 to 8 o'clock, the Green Center, they're getting to be able to do this again, the Fall Fire Festival, and it's going to be back. And family and friends, the annual Fire Festival on Saturday, November 6th, as I said before, an evening under the stars, listening to music, watching amazing fire performers, and warming up around the bonfire, having some s'mores, visiting an art exhibit by St. Louis artists, and kids' activity station and all this other stuff. Beverages are included in the ticket price, and there's going to be food trucks there as well. We've done this a couple years. So if you're interested, the Green Center is in University City, and you can just contact them and get the tickets and everything else. So if you get them in advance, you're going to save some money. So here's the number for the Green Center, 314-725-8314, or you can go to info@thegreencenter.org. And like I said, this fire festival, it's really kind of cool because by early November, the weather's starting to get kind of chilly. And so to get out there and see these fires and stuff, it's just like, whoa, we really have had a good time the times we've gone to this. So anyway, the Green Center's Fall Fire Festival, November 6th. So again, info@thegreencenter.org. So they get the tip of the trowel today. Let's do a call or two before we take a break. Let's go over to Laura's house. Hi, Laura.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
I have a question. I've got, I think it's called powdery mildew. It's on my peony bushes, mm-hmm. my Japanese maple. It's just all over a lot of my plants. Is that going to hurt them, or can I spray something to get rid of that, or what do I need to do?
Basically, don't let it bother you. It really doesn't hurt the plants. It's always, you know, near the end of the season after they've, let's say, performed, and after what it does, you know, we worry a little bit about it because it kind of covers the foliage. And does that have an impact on the amount of food that they're able to make? But it's always near the end of their growing season. So, no, don't worry about it. It's just something that is not really necessarily good to look at. But like with your peonies, once it starts to get that on there, you can cut that foliage off. Just get rid of the foliage. Just don't, you know, cut it and let it drop and stay there.
Okay.
And
I have one other question, but also, even though
you clear it away, you're still going to get the powdery mildew next year. There's no getting around it.
Oh, okay. Okay. The elephant ears, do I wait till the vegetation like wilts down or something, or when do I dig those up?
Yeah, you can really do it whenever you want to. I mean, a lot of times, you know, people will say, or professionals will say, wait until the frost nips them, or wait until they wilt down, or whatever. I just prefer to do it while they're still, you know, kind of at the end of the season. I've already started to dig some of mine up, and then I put them in the garage, let them dry, pull them out of the pots, you know, shake all the potting mix off of them, or, you know, shake the soil off of them. Let them dry. Then I cut the foliage off at that time, and then I put them in paper bags and then bring them inside and put them in the basement.
Okay, I did that last year and saved some, and I then transplanted them this spring, and they all came up. So,
right.
I have a hosta that I'm wanting to move. It's called Big Blue. It's humongous, mm-hmm. and should I wait on that until the frost gets that down, or should I go ahead and try moving that now?
You could move it now because it's really at the end of the season. Even though the foliage is not showing signs of heading towards decline, the days are getting shorter. Hopefully the temperatures are going to start to get cooler. So you could do it now.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Mike, and you have a good day.
You do the very same thing. And let's go over to Jackie's yard now. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very good.
A couple questions. One's a Florida question. I became a snowbird last year, and I have a patio in my backyard that was covered with weeds. Dug it all out, cleaned it up, looks great. A neighbor sent me a picture a week ago. You can't even see the patio. It's all grown over with weeds again. Is there anything I can put on when I leave in March that would prevent all these weeds from coming back every year?
It all depends on what type of weeds they are. If they're coming back and they're perennial weeds, that's going to be problematic. But, other than, kind of treating them with, a pre-emergent and a post-emergent both, but the fact that you're talking about it's multiple months, the chances of not having any more weeds, being invasive is going to be minimal.
Okay, you can't even see the patio. It's just gone. I didn't even know there was a patio back there. It was, not a new house, but we brought a house. Didn't even know it was back there. Okay, second question is regarding butterfly weed perennial. I bought one from a reputable garden shop on the September 22nd, and it's turning yellow. I planted it in the sun, in the back. Why did I overwater it, underwater it? Is it because it's new and I just put it in? But it's yellow, and I have a chrysalis on it or on another one of my plants. And it's like, what's going on that this one, my butterfly weed died?
Yeah,
maybe.
It's probably just a transition. It's coming out of a retail nursery circumstance. And ideal circumstance, the place you put it in is just not the ideal situation. So it's just probably going to sleep. I wouldn't worry too much about it.
So wait till next year. And is a butterfly weed annual better than a butterfly weed perennial for butterflies?
Well, perennials is going to create a colony or create, they're going to add more. An annual butterfly weed, I don't know that particular plant, to be honest.
Yeah, because they said, you get more monarchs with an annual butterfly weed.
Well,
I don't know. My neighbor's an organic garden. She just told me what to go buy, and I did. And they said, well, maybe, something else. So,
yeah.
Well, I'm waiting for my monarch to, I'll say, hatch. He's been in there almost 13 days. So waiting. He's still green. And I'm getting a lot of hummingbirds.
Perfect. Well, great.
So, okay. I'll try a pre-emergent next year. At least maybe it'll give me some time. But
right.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Thanks, Jackie. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your questions, concerns, or comments.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, we have phone lines open. If you have questions, concerns, comments, ideas, or whatever, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head over to Josie's. Hi, Josie.
Yeah, hi. I have a few questions for you.
Okay.
Is it time to move a small crepe myrtle now, or should I wait till spring?
It's probably still blooming, isn't it?
The little one, they're little, very little, and they haven't bloomed yet.
Okay, so I would probably think, since it is a summer bloomer, even though it isn't blooming right now, I'd wait until springtime to do it. I don't know how small are they.
Oh, they're about a foot high.
Then I would say go ahead, just make sure you get adequate root system, water them the night before so you can, keep as much soil attached to the root system as possible, and then you go ahead and move them. Or ideally, you could wait until, let's say, sometime in mid-March and do it at that time.
Okay, that sounds good. Another question. My backyard is just like getting overrun by chickweed. What can I do for that?
Basically, it's a pre-emergent, so a pre-emergence, you're going to have to be putting down when the forsythia is in bloom, because chickweed's a, you know, summer, let's say a summer lover, likes the heat.
Okay. So forsythia, we're talking spring.
Right, exactly.
Early spring.
Right. That's, you know, the pre-emergent.
Okay. I got you there. And one other question. I have a banana tree plant in a pot. Can I keep it and cut it back and keep it in the pot?
You can leave it in the pot. You can't leave it outside.
Right. I know that.
Okay. Yeah. You can cut it back and just watch out. The sap of banana plants will stain your clothes unbelievably.
Okay. And should I put it in my garage or should I bring it in the basement area?
The basement's going to be better because your garage is probably going to get below freezing.
Okay. And I need to water it sometimes?
Probably not.
Probably not. Okay. Well, thank you. You answer all my questions.
Sure. My pleasure. And let's head over to Jim's yard. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
Hey, good morning, and thanks for your service. Long-time caller, listener, first-time caller. And that that stain from banana palms is also the same as elephant ears. That'll ruin your clothes, too.
True.
I have an area between a driveway and a sidewalk that grass won't even grow. Weeds definitely grow in there, but I'm trying to think of something else I could put in there that would... Doesn't need a lot of water and will look green besides something plastic.
Basically, look at some of the varieties of sedum, S-E-D-U-M. There's several different varieties, and they're tough, they're durable, and that's what I have between my sidewalk and street.
Good. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep. And like I said, there's several different varieties of sedum, so personal choice. Some of them have purplish leaves, some of them have green, and some of them have a bluish green. There's just many different, and just choose, it maybe even a blend. You don't have to do just a mono stand of a single one.
I think that's a great call. Appreciate that.
Sure.
Thank you.
And also what I do with my sedum is I mix in some sweet alyssum. Sweet alyssum is a plant that basically self-seeds. So it, you know, will come back every year by just dropping seed that, you know, germinates the following year. Small clusters of white flowers that have some fragrance to them. Now, sometimes they get a little aggressive and kind of overgrow the sedums, but the sedum doesn't seem to mind because it's, you know, finally the sweet alyssum will kind of disappear, and then the sedum will be there for the rest of the wintertime. So anyway, let's head over to Amy's yard. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been wanting to start a indoor garden for the winter in my basement, and I've been looking at different things. I'm really overwhelmed with lighting, like what kind of lights I should get for, like, doing lettuce, spinach, you know, just like green leafy vegetables.
Basically, you know, I mean, you can go to the big box stores and just get the fluorescent tubes for, yeah, I mean, they'll call them grow lights. So that's probably the best thing to do. The secret is, too, also to make sure that the let's say, the fixture, the fluorescent fixture, is only a couple inches above the stuff that you're trying to grow. So you don't want to have it like 4 feet above. So, in other words, it's got to be on a table or whatever it happens to be. And so it might take some engineering on your part.
So, I mean, if they're on a shelving unit and I put the shop lights on a chain and raise it up as the plants grow, that would work, right?
Yeah, exactly. Sure.
So, but as far as, like, lumens and temperature, like, I've seen things that anywhere from, like, 5,000 to 6,500 Kelvin to, you know, with, like, the higher the lumens, the farther away you put the lights. Do you have, like, a recommendation for, like,
no, I mean, that's probably getting a little bit more technical than what you need to worry about, to be honest.
Okay. All right. There's just so much information about there, like different lights, and like you start reading into it and you're like, oh my God, I'm picking out the wrong light for my plant.
No, just, as long as you're, let's say, on top of it and you're watching it, just be objective, and that's about all you really need to do.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure. I mean, we can make things super complicated, and there's no reason to do that. I mean, certainly there's going to be some things that are necessary, but Oh, well, let's go over to Joe's. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I have some of that sedum in a front flower bed, and I'm just wondering, does that ever have to be pruned?
Basically not. I mean, it's tough. It's durable. It depends upon the variety. I mean, there's one variety called Sweet Autumn or Autumn Joy. Autumn Joy gets pretty long. So usually when they finish blooming, they're, budded now, starting to flower right now. When they finish that, then you can cut them back down because they get, let's say, 12 inches or so tall. Cut them back down to like 2 or 3 inches. But for the most part, the sedums are like carpet. They grow right on top of the ground, any place between like an inch or a half inch, all the way up to 4 or 5 inches. So, no, they don't need to be pruned.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. My pleasure. And 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We have some phone lines open, so give us a call.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Alex, could you do some rewinding? Thank you, Alex. I appreciate it. The lady that called, she was asking about chickweed. For some reason, I was thinking she was saying crabgrass. The chickweed, if she has a problem, when you're going to put the pre-emergent down with chickweed is not when the forsythia is in bloom. It's going to be in late August, mid to late August. So chickweed pre-emergent goes down mid to late August. So that was my mistake. I wasn't paying attention. And I was saying, she was saying chickweed. I was thinking crabgrass. So that was, we'll rewind that and get rid of that. So that was my mistake. I only have one more mistake. And then the garden hotline will be euphonized. Anyway, let's head over to Sally's yard. Hi, Sally.
Mr. Miller, really appreciate your show. I have a flower pot that I have cactus in, and I don't know what the scientific name of the cactus is. It's like, we call it cattails because it's got a little furry, long tail of a thing. Anyways, I keep it in the backyard, and in the summertime, I notice one or two spiders that like to grow in there or make their little webs in there. Anyways, if I'm going to get ready to bring it in so the cactus lives through the winter, and I want to spray it with bug killer, will it kill my plant?
Shouldn't. I mean, they're okay. Two totally different things. Just read the label and make sure temperature-wise and everything else when you spray. But no, it shouldn't be a problem. If you see the spiders, why don't you just get rid of them? You
know? I do, but then something rebuilds.
So you're not really getting rid of them.
I guess not. Yeah. I kill it, but a new one takes up
house there. Insecticides, sometimes for spiders and spider mites and things like that, it takes a very specific type of insecticide as opposed to a regular, like, bug be gone type thing. So just read the label, make sure it'll kill spiders.
Yes, okay. Thank you so much.
Sure, my pleasure.
Bye-bye.
And now let's head to Mary's yard. Wow, first time we've talked to Mary in about 15 minutes. Hi, Mary.
I enjoy your show. I don't get to listen very often, and I missed part of it today, so if you already covered this. Creeping Jenny. I want to get rid of a lot of it, and I know people that want it. Is it too late to transplant it now? And stuff like hostas. You know, just your perennials that are pretty hardy to come back every year. Is there any we shouldn't transplant right now?
No, basically anything you can, any perennials that are in bloom now, like mums or asters or any of those fall blooming type things, don't move them now. But anything, the hostas, they bloom in the in the summertime. So anything that's already bloomed, you can, transplant, dig, and that. And the creeping Jenny, that's a little bit difficult, to dig it up because, it's a ground cover. So it's going to be tough unless you just really want to try to do it. It's going to be, I don't know if it's going to be worth the effort.
Oh. Well, what's sad is it's just overtaken this last spring. It was beautiful during the fall and the winter. And in the spring, it was so beautiful, but it just took over my, I had no idea that it was that invasive.
Yeah, it is.
But I got to get it out of there anyway, and somebody wanted some, so.
Well, you could dig some up and, you know, put it in a pot and try to give it to them, or put it in a flat and see, you
okay.
know. But, you know, kind of to it's going to be a lot of work, let's put it that way.
Oh, yeah. I tried to get most of it out of there last spring, and it was. You are right. Okay, thank you.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go to David Yard. Hi, David.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Mike. I was watching a video about the Sahara, and apparently the Sahara Desert was green maybe, I don't know how many thousands of years ago, and it apparently went desert within about 100 years. And thinking about how America has gone through some massive floods, in the last 5 years in the upper Missouri, there have been just massive floods and a lot of topsoil loss. The Hurricane Harvey, didn't that wash out? I think it was like 55 inches of rain in 2 days or so. And then, of course, Hurricane Ida just ripping across from New Orleans all the way up to New York. A lot of topsoil is being lost in America. Do you think that topsoil should be included in the infrastructure bill?
Oh, boy. I don't know how you could possibly do that because it's, you know, I mean, it's so fragile and it's dependent upon, described, weather dependent. So I guess it could be, but I don't know exactly how that would actually work.
Well, in the past, you remember the Dust Bowl days of going on 100 years ago.
Sure.
They decided that farmers should not be planting straight down to the creek, that they had to have a buffer.
Right.
And in the original, I'm trying to think if it was like 10 feet, but in later years, I think in the 1970s, it was brought up to about 20 feet. And, you know, so there had to be a buffer of vines and, you know, trees and whatnot to hold that topsoil from washing into the creeks.
Right.
And so, you know, that being said, there can be plenty of, land set-aside programs for agricultural properties so that they don't lose their topsoil.
Sure.
But again, you know, this issue, I mean, it's bad enough that the Republicans are not signing on to the infrastructure bill, but that America is losing a lot of topsoil. And that topsoil going into the Gulf of Mexico, apparently that Hurricane Ida, the water temperature in the Gulf of Mexico was between 88 and 90 degrees. It wasn't cool water in the Gulf of Mexico. That's like bathtub water.
Right.
And so the more of the topsoil is being sent down to the Gulf of Mexico, the more murky it gets and the more the hotter it gets.
Right. Well, thanks, David. I greatly appreciate your ideas. And now let's head over to Bob's. Hi, Bob. Hello, Bob.
Yes.
Go ahead. Yes.
I've got a question about using walnut. They're actually shavings from a thickness planer, using them as mulch or composting them or killing them in my garden, or what can I use them for rather than just putting them in the trash?
You're talking about the hulls that they're around them?
No, it's the actual wood. I've got boards that they're rough cut boards, and I'm finishing them. I'm running them through a thickness planer, so I'm getting, they're shavings. It's not sawdust. It's a little coarser than that.
Okay. You can use it as a mulch, but just don't take it immediately and put it on top of plant material. You're going to have to, like, let's say, go through a process of composting to let it sort of melt down a little bit, because if you put raw wood on top of plant material, what it can do is absorbs moisture, and it can prevent nutrients from being available for the plant material. So it's not just that's why I recommend people not Like when a tree service comes and does a lot of chipping, don't put that stuff on your yard or on your landscape because it does more problems than it's going to do good. So you're going to have to pile it up for a couple years, and then after it sort of like breaks down, then you could spread it in your landscape.
Okay, so I would be better. I've got a compost pile, so I would be better putting it in the compost and letting it break down before I try to use it.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, thank you.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's head over to Barbara's. Hi, Barbara.
Good morning. I want to thank you for your program because I get so educated on Saturday morning. But anyway, I have a question for you about a Rose of Sharon tree.
Okay.
We have a very small one. It was planted when we moved into our house 2 years ago. And much to my chagrin, I thought that everything that I saw on the Rose of Sharon right now were new buds that were going to open up. And then after they opened, then we could trim them. But I found out that those little buds are seed pods. So I have hundreds of seed pods on my Rose of Sharon bush, and I want to know when we can trim that back because my husband would like to trim that and make it a smaller bush. Do we do that now, or will we ruin the flowers for next year?
Basically, since it's a summer bloomer, you can prune it all the way from the time when the foliage starts dropping off until the new foliage starts coming out in the springtime. So you got about 4 or 5 months. So any of the summer bloomers, basically during the wintertime, that's when you can prune them. The spring bloomers, if you prune them now, you're cutting off the flowers for next year.
Okay, so ours has completely stopped blooming.
Right.
So it would be all right to now trim that bush.
Yeah, you could do it now.
All right. Thank you so much. We enjoy your program.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. I greatly appreciate it. And let's go ahead and take a break. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, let's head over to Doug's yard. Hi, Doug. How are you?
Couple of reasons I'm calling. I have a walnut tree that is like walking through a yard full of walnuts. Okay. What do you have to do to walnuts to make them edible?
I think you just have to, basically you have to get something that takes that hull off of it. So in other words, there's the walnuts in the center of it and it's got this big roundish thing. When I was a kid, there was actually a thing that kind of like a grinder, and you drop the walnuts down in there, and you turn this handle, and it would basically take that hull off, and then you just let them dry. That's all you basically have to do.
Okay. My other question is, I have some of these real long, you know, they come, they're nippers, they're cutters for trimming limbs 10, 15 foot in the air. I have an oak tree that has got a lot of galls on it. Would it hurt the tree, or would it be beneficial to use this thing and cut those galls off and throw them in the trash?
So you're talking about a pole pruner? That's what?
Yes.
And I mean, you can cut them off. It's not going to make that much difference because they're still going to be, you know, you're not going to be able to get rid of all of them. You're going to get rid of some of them. So yeah, go ahead and do it. I mean, it's good exercise too.
Yeah. Well, I don't like the looks of them, and I know that the tree is about 25 foot tall.
Right.
So I could go ahead and use that long pruner and cut them off as best I can.
Sure. Because usually they're going to be closer to the tip of the branches as opposed to, you know, towards the center.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep. And now let's go to Mike's yard. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how are you doing?
Very good.
Got a question about dethatching. I roughed up some grass in front, got a trouble area, my lawn. It's a mix of lawn. There's some Bermuda. I figured out it's tall fescue, bluegrass. It's a Pennington mixed seed stuff. So anyway, it turned brown, so I roughed it up, overseeded again, and I got a ton of dead grass. Do I wait till spring to dethatch and get that old stuff out of there?
You should have got the old stuff out before you put the new stuff in.
Oh.
You should have raked all that. Yeah, you should have raked that junk out of there, and that would have made it so the seed that you put down would be in contact with the ground, as opposed to being laying on top of the, let's say, the dead grass that's there.
Well, I roughed it up a little bit with the rake, and but then when I went to work it in further is when I got most of the stuff. So I went backwards then, huh, Mike?
Yep, exactly.
All right. Okay, well, next time I'll try better. Thanks.
Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah, it's a lot of work. I mean, there's no getting around it. So, and, yeah, get rid of the debris. So the grass seed, and hopefully you put a seed starter down with a seed, and you water the, I don't know when you put the seed down, but you got to water it basically daily for almost 2 weeks, especially because we've had these extended dry periods.
Yep, I did it this morning, hoping it's going to rain all afternoon and tomorrow and whatnot. So, yeah. Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Mike.
Sure. And now let's go over to Jay's yard. Hi, Jay.
Hi, good morning, Mike. I had a question about banana trees. Last year, we had a banana tree that did real well, kept it outside. And in the fall, well, it got up to about 5 foot tall, and there were a couple smaller shoots on the sides that got up to maybe 2 or 3 foot.
Uh-huh.
Cut those down and just left them in the left the pot in the basement over the winter, and then brought the pot out this spring. And the main shoot that got 5 foot last year did not come back, but the smaller shoots did. But they only grew to about 2 foot tall, and that was it. They just, I mean, they did well, but never got tall. Is there anything that I need to do different if I'm going to cut those down again this fall and try and keep those going for next year?
Well, you can cut them down. I mean, just don't cut them too, you know, too close, and just leave them in the pot. And that's really all you have to do. Why they only got as big as they did, it's a little bit difficult, you know, to say. But it could be the size of the pot too. How large of a pot are they in?
Oh, it's probably about 15 inches across.
Yeah, it might be a little bit small, so that it may be having a bonsai impact on your banana. But they should have gotten bigger than 2 feet, you know.
So, and that's what we were curious, if we should separate those two shoots that came back this year and put one in a separate pot.
No,
the other.
I would not probably bother doing that.
Okay. But should I keep them together and just put them both together in a bigger pot?
Yeah. I've probably, again, put it probably in a 20 or 24 inch pot.
Okay. We'll give that a try then. Thank you very much.
Yep. My pleasure. And now let's go to Joseph's yard. Hi, Joseph.
Yes. Calling about, I have two over 100-year-old oak trees in my front yard, and I would like to, there's concern about a lot of these bigger trees that are, they're just old now, and they're coming down in our community, about people planting like just ornamental trees, and we really miss the big canopies associated with these massive trees. My thought is, if I wanted to grow a couple of trees from these oak trees, what's the best way, can I grow them from seed? I would like to do that.
No, you can't. To try to grow them from an acorn, that's going to be a waste of your time. You can take cuttings off the end of the branches and get some rooting hormone, and you're going to have to grow them in pots for several years before they're going to be, let's say, established enough from a root system standpoint to be able to be planted in the landscape.
I mean, what do you mean by cutting?
Well, like a 18 to 24 inch end of a twig, end of a branch.
Oh, okay.
And then cut it at a 45 degree angle, go to your favorite garden center, get some rooting hormone. You're going to dip that cut, so make sure you get the rooting hormone first before you cut, and then dip it into the, you know, dip the cut, brand new cut, into the rooting hormone, and then put it in a potting mix in a pot for starting plant material.
Okay. That sounds good. Thank you.
Sure. And, yeah, I mean, and then it's going to, like I say, be several years. Leave it in the pot and just sink the pot into, you know, a location in your landscape, and just leave it there for a couple of years with the top of the pot a little bit higher than the surrounding ground, so you don't want to bury the entire pot. So, Ron, I'm sorry we're not going to be able to get to you today, but thanks to everybody for calling in. I greatly appreciate it. And I hopefully, I don't, you know, when it's going to rain, I don't know. But the ground is very dry. If you don't have a chance, or if you do have a chance, go out and start watering your landscape right now, because when it does rain, that'll enable it to penetrate deeper into the ground. Mike Miller, KMWatch Garden Hotline. See you next week.